I'm Mark Purcell, and this is Cincinnati Edition. Author Sharon Astick talks to Thane Maynard this morning about her book, Making Home, Adapting Our Homes and Our Lives to Settle in Place.
Hi, Sharon. This is Thane Maynard.
Hi. How are you?
I'm very well. Did we catch you out on your farm?
Yeah, actually. You caught me moving furniture. But
there you go. Well, you're making home, and I'll tell you, your book, it really is terrific. It makes me think of Wendell Berry if he knew how to blog.
Thank you. That's quite a compliment.
Well, as you know, it certainly has a lot of that same feeling about living life intentionally rather than just being busy all the time. How is the book being received?
I think very well. I mean, it's only been out a few weeks now, so I've only heard good things, but maybe if there are terrible things being said, they're being said by my back.
It's a neat thing, and I think the idea of people slowing down a bit, certainly being less transient and sort of putting down roots makes sense, and as you pointed out, especially we're in a changing time, both economically and ecologically. So tell us, what made you write this book, or what's the driving point behind it?
Well, I've been writing about my life for a long time on the internet, and I've written other books. And what people want to know is, well, how do I duplicate that? And the reality is my life isn't duplicable. I mean, everybody's circumstances are different. I live in a rural area with a lot of land. I have a whole bunch of kids. You know, that's not everybody's circumstance. But what people really wanted to know was, well, how do you use 80%, 90% less of the less energy? How do we save a lot of money? How do we have a good life without it feeling like we're depriving ourselves? And I think that's the thing that we've managed to do, and that's the thing that translates all over the place, whether people are living in apartments in cities or in the suburbs, wherever anybody is I can't tell you exactly how to do it, but there's tools that you can use to work on that.
Absolutely. And, you know, in your book, you explore that, especially this idea of sort of settling in place, which I'm assuming is one of the hard first steps, because I think we are a culture where, for instance, I'm in the zoo business. A lot of my colleagues have worked at 6, 7, 8, 9 different zoos, all in different cities.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, our jobs drag us around, our expectations drag us around. You know, think about the anger we lavish on people who stay at home. I mean, the idea of living in your parents' basement as a metaphor for failure, the idea that living close together or staying close to your roots and staying in one place represents a kind of failure is, I think, something that's endemic in our culture. And yet, you know, there's something about staying put. And a lot of us are going to have that thrust upon us. You know, there isn't another job this time. Our house is underwater financially. We really can't afford to move. We need to be closer to our family for some help. And so we have to make the best of it. Other people are choosing this. They're choosing to go back to where their family or where their roots or their community is. But it can be really challenging, because I think we're all used to always having an eye on where the grass might be greener.
But, you know, it's a thing that we've only really lived with this big affluence since about the Second World War. So people ought to be able to, if you will, relearn those skills that, for instance, my grandmother, who lived in rural West Virginia, she lived a terrifically simple life. And yet I can still remember very fondly as a little boy going to visit them, even though by any modern standards, there was flat out nothing to do there.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the crazy things about modernity is, in a weird way, it makes it so we can't go home again. I mean, in order for us to say that unless we have a certain amount of wealth and all these certain electronics and all of these appliances and things, life isn't worth living, in order for that to be true, we have to say that the lives of our grandparents and our great-grandparents weren't happy and didn't have any hope or value in them. And that's just not true. I think all of us can remember, you know, why that isn't true. But it's one of those things where, in a way, the more we keep telling ourselves we need all of this, the harder it is for us to go back and step back into a life that's really not that different.
Absolutely. Now, I know in the book, a neat thing you did was really reveal some strategies or things people can do, whether it's to save money or, you know, save resources where they live. Tell a bit about how those kinds of things actually can be kind of getting more from having less.
The neat thing is, art basically is getting the most out of everything you've got, every brushstroke if you're a painter, every word if you're a poet. And I think in a lot of ways, life as art is about getting the most out of everything you use. Instead of this sort of unconscious way that we've done things, the way we heat our homes or cool our homes because that's what came with our house or the way everybody else does, this sort of conscious extraction of the most comfort and pleasure and grace and beauty from the fewest resources becomes a kind of life as art thing that I found just absolutely glorious. So we sit around with Okay. I've been using a mixer to make bread. Do I need the mixer? What's it like if I don't use it? How much faster is throwing the laundry in the dryer than hanging it up to dry? You know, how much does it matter if we turn the thermostat down this much? Are we uncomfortable? What makes a difference? And sometimes things do make a difference, but sometimes we find that simple, really simple adaptations make things a little bit more tolerable. I mean, turning the heat down is a really big deal if you've never sat down and really sought out all the drafts and sealed up your house. But if you manage to keep the drafts out, it's really not such a big deal.
You've got your book, you've got your blog. Is this part of, you think, of a movement of people who are not just in some, oh gosh, 1970s hippie thing, but really just saying, this is a better lifestyle. I like it this way.
I think it is. And there's a lot of different groups of people experimenting with this. I mean, there are people who are concerned about the economic issues and are coming at this from a perspective of thrift. There are people who are concerned about climate change or about oil access or our dependence on foreign oil who come at this from an energy standpoint. And ultimately, those folks don't always necessarily agree, but we don't really have to. I mean, I think the reality is that we know that the way of life that we've had is coming to an end. We're not as rich as we used to be. We don't have all the oil we'd want to use. The climate is changing. And whatever reasons for you to make those changes, ultimately, we're going to have to make some changes anyway. So why not go into them joyfully and excited about the possibilities? Americans use so much of so many things. I mean, think we use, you know, close to 120 gallons of water a day in the average household. You know, there's a lot of room for savings that really aren't all that difficult.
Well, an example of that I know in my life is at the Cincinnati Zoo where I work. 6 years ago, we hired a civil engineer to run our facilities program, and engineers measure things, right? It's just about math. So he started looking at our water usage, electric, natural gas, and man, we save so much, both resources and money, compared to 6 years ago. But as you said, we're not doing less. The zoo's still open. All the animals still have plenty to drink. We just don't waste as much.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. It's just clearing out the waste. I mean, Americans waste 40% of their food. I mean, that's just an astonishing thing. So just looking at all the places where, you know, we didn't think, you know, we drove past the library twice this week, but we then made a third trip out to go to the library on one day, you know, when we could have just stopped and returned those books then. All those things that we don't think about very much are just places where there's enormous change can be made without any pain and suffering.
Absolutely. Now, I know in the book you talk a bit about how through email and through your blog, you'll hear from people who are eager to change the world. They want to do some huge thing somewhere else far away, when a lot of times the change really is at your own doorstep.
Yeah, and I'm not opposed to changing the world. In fact, I'd like to. I mean, but I do think we have to understand the implications of our choices. If we want to see less coal mined and burned for electricity, or if we want to see our country being more economically responsible, or if we want to see ourselves less dependent on foreign oil, we need to understand what the implications of those choices are and say, well, what's my part in this? Because individually, none of our choices matter that much. As a collective of 320 million people all making individual choices, mostly without consideration for those things, we're headed for a disaster.
Absolutely. And yet, I'll say this, the neat thing about your book is that it really celebrates what's possible. This is not a thing, oh gosh, you bad old people wasting all that, you should be ashamed. This is just a way to celebrate and show that your family, I know you talked about, you use 80% less energy and other resources than a typical family. I mean, that's saying something, and yet you're still healthy and happy and thriving.
Yeah, and most of it, the first 50% doesn't even really hurt for the most part. It's after 50% it gets challenging, but there's still ways to work around it. One of the simplest ones is to share. I mean, energy is calculated per capita, but the minute you say, get another person in your car on your commute, the minute you make use of a resource in combination with somebody else, invite your neighbor over to dinner so she doesn't have to cook one night a week, you've cut in half your usage.
Well, Sharon, thanks for spending a few minutes with us. Your book is terrific, and I'll encourage folks to read it.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Sharon Astick, author of the new book, Making Home. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.